Welcome to State of the Bay. I'm Grace Wong. Tonight, we're talking with two candidates who are running against London Breed to be San Francisco's next mayor. First up is Mark Farrell, a former District 2 supervisor who had a brief stint as mayor in 2018. Later this hour, I'll be talking to District 11 supervisor Asha Safai about his candidacy. We've also invited candidates Daniel Lurie and Mayor London Breed to a later edition of State of the Bay, so look out for that. First, let's turn to Mark Farrell. He's a graduate of Stuart Hall and St. Ignatius Prep. Farrell's also a San Francisco native and a longtime resident of the Marina. In 2010, he was elected to the Board of Supervisors representing District 2, and he served two terms. When then-Mayor Ed Lee unexpectedly passed away in 2018, the Board of Supervisors president, London Breed, was appointed and served as interim mayor until, following a vote by the board, Farrell was elected to serve out the remaining 6 months of Lee's term. In addition to his experience in San Francisco's government, Mark is a lawyer and venture capitalist. Mark Farrell, welcome to State of the Bay.
Thanks very much for having me. Great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. And to our listeners, we want you to be part of this conversation. I'm sure you may have questions for Mr. Farrell. We're going to be talking to Mark about why he thinks he is the right person to be mayor of San Francisco at this time. And we'd love to know what you'd like to ask him and what your main issues are as you go to the voting polls in November. Give us a call. We're at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Or find us on social media or email us at stateofthebay@kalw.org. So, Mark, I just wanted to dive right into it because the center of your campaign is public safety, and that's something that concerns a lot of San Francisco citizens. The statistics say that San Francisco is safe. Murder rates are low, some of the lowest they've ever been. But you say people don't feel safe and that we need to fire the police chief, Bill Scott. Why is that?
Look, Chief Scott is a good man, and this is one of a number of points that I make about our police department and public safety in general. Again, he's a good man and a good family man. The reality is the average tenure of a police chief in the United States is 3 years, and Chief Scott has been here for close to eight. And I firmly believe in talking with officers throughout the rank and file of our police department that we need a new injection of leadership to provide inspiration for the rank and file, and to really kind of take on the next step in what's going to be the evolution of our police department here in San Francisco.
Well, you chaired the budget committee for many years when you're on the Board of Supervisors, mm-hmm. and San Francisco is facing a significant deficit, something in the hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm curious, from your perspective, what does a reasonable investment in public safety look like?
Well, to be quite frank, it's really a complete change in direction from what we've seen over the last 6 years under this mayor. You know, when I was chair of our budget committee for 4 years, end up being the longest serving budget chair in our city's history, and partner with Mayor Lee. And then when he did pass away, unfortunately, and I became mayor in 2018, we grew our police department every single year. To the tune of, when I left office in 2018, there were over 2,350 police officers in our department. And since then, we have lost over 600 police officers. So more than 25% of our police department is gone. And to me, that's simply not putting the public safety of our residents first. That's turning whether it be willful or not, a blind eye to our staffing levels and how that affects San Francisco residents. And I believe we need to change direction.
So much has happened, though, since you left office in 2018. We had COVID, we had George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement that really put police across the country under the spotlight. So is Chief Scott to blame for that?
Oh, look, not at all. I'm not blaming Chief Scott for anything here. For me, this is about, you know, really taking an honest look at our police department, the tenure of our police chief at this point in time, and saying that we need new leadership. We need a different type of enthusiasm. We need a police chief right now that is going to fight for additional budget dollars, a police chief that will fight for additional personnel, and simply won't take direction from our police commission. You know, the reality is 2 years ago, our current mayor stripped $120 million, or approximately 20% of our police department budget, out of our police department. And this year is asking for another 10% budget cuts across the board because all of the fiscal mismanagement that is happening. To me, that is not prioritizing public safety, and that's not putting San Francisco residents first. And look, you know, the police department is not the solution for everything, but I do believe that the number one job of our government is to keep our residents safe. We haven't done that. We've gotten to the point where we're at record low police staffing levels. And again, we need to change direction and put the safety of our residents first.
What about the concerns among communities, particularly diverse communities, that feel that the police force does not always seem to serve their interests well? You have this message of let's get more police officers on the street, but these would be new officers, maybe not as experienced or as well trained as officers who've been on the force for a long time. So what's your message to neighborhoods and districts in the city that might be a little bit hesitant about an augmented police force?
Sure. I would say a few things. First of all, if anybody in any department, our police department as well, acts out of line or inappropriately, we hold them accountable. And my government and my administration as mayor will hold people strictly accountable to do their jobs and to do it in the right way. Obviously, the police department and officers when our police department have a much more public-facing point of view and a lot more interaction with our public. But I will tell you, in my interactions with community members in every single neighborhood in San Francisco, they welcome our police department here in the city. The men and women of our police department are some of the most incredible people that we have working for our city government right now, truly dedicated not only to the safety, but to the in service of San Francisco. You know, I spent last Friday evening on a ride along the majority of my time in the Bayview station in those neighborhoods. And the dedication of these individuals and these officers is truly incredible and something we should all really be thankful for as San Francisco residents.
You know, what we've seen a lot in the last couple of years in terms of city government is there's a lot of finger pointing. The DA might blame the police for not arresting people. The police blame the DA for not bringing their arrests to cases. The mayor blames the police and the this and the that. I mean, there's just a lot of finger pointing. So if you're a mayor, will the buck stop with you? Will you take responsibility?
Look, 100%. And in my opinion, that is the one thing we've sorely lacked over the past 6 years is true leadership in City Hall. You know, all we hear is a litany of excuses from we can't do anything because of the Board of Supervisors or a commission or pick another entity that you want to blame, as opposed to saying, you know what, I'm the leader of our city government. Here's my vision for the city of San Francisco. Here's the roadmap on how I'll get there. Hold me accountable. And we certainly have no vision coming out of City Hall right now about the future of San Francisco. And we certainly don't have any accountability and leadership or people willing to take accountability. I believe that's a key element of having residents trust in our city government to be willing to be held accountable and not blame everybody else. I will handle it completely differently as mayor.
Well, would you say that Mayor Breed has no vision? I mean, she's put forward efforts to try to streamline the housing and getting permits through. She's tried to revive downtown. She's trying to bring in, you know, more policing on the streets and through cameras. I mean, is that no vision?
Well, I challenge each one of those aspects. You know, 2 years ago, she took $120 million out of our police department budget. It's about 20% of our budget for our police department. Now, because it's more politically expedient, choosing to, you know, at least publicly proclaim that she's pro-police, to me, that's flip-flopping at its worst. You know, in terms of investing downtown, there has never been a mayor in modern history that has overseen a steeper decline in our downtown corridor from an economy perspective than this mayor. You know, whether it's the Nordstrom's or the Macy's or the North Face, or the fact that, you know, our vacancy rate is higher than any other major U.S. city in the United States. It's tragic what's become of our local economy. And I simply don't believe that either there's been intention or if there has been, it's simply a failure of policy at the end of the day. The results speak for themselves, unfortunately.
Last week, you advocated for fencing off areas of the Tenderloin and bringing in the National Guard. Mayor Breed responded to that proposal with this statement, quote, in Mark Farrell, San Francisco, armed National Guard troops will fence off the Tenderloin and create the Green Zone, truly creating a Baghdad by the Bay. Residents and commuters aren't looking for a police state. They want a leader to meaningfully address the fentanyl crisis with enforcement and compassion, not Humvees and AR-15s. What's your response to Mayor Breed's salvo?
That's simply pure comedy. I never talk about fencing off the Tenderloin or bringing in Humvees. I mean, it's actually hilarious. But the reality is, I don't believe it's compassionate, humane, or progressive to allow record number of people to die on the streets of San Francisco every single year. And the bottom line is, in 2023, we broke our own record for the number of overdose deaths on our streets in San Francisco, over 860, I believe. And this year we're on pace to set another record. To me, it's one example of many of simple failed leadership and failed policy coming out of City Hall. You know, right now, the current administration is treating the fentanyl crisis that we have with baby steps and really treating it like the heroin and meth issues that we had 10, 15 years ago, handing out free drug paraphernalia in the Tenderloin at the same time saying that we're going to arrest people for using drugs. It's absolute insanity. And the honest answer is we are breaking our own records of deaths on our streets. That is not compassionate. That is not progressive. But more than anything, I would ask any San Francisco resident, literally walk through the Tenderloin during the day, let alone at night, and ask yourself, is this working? Is this progress? I would argue it's only gotten worse. Statistically, it's only gotten worse. And we need to have a change of direction in City Hall if we're going to make a meaningful difference in people's lives and, more importantly, save lives.
Well, I just want to be clear. You did ask for the California, an armed California National Guard to help with the fentanyl state of emergency, to implement a bold recovery plan to save lives and close open air drug markets. So one of your plans is to bring in the National Guard, right?
But the reality is we need in the Tenderloin additional law enforcement personnel to help. Because our own police department has been so depleted under this administration, again, we have lost over 25% of our police department in the last 6 years since I left office. I mean, there's no wonder that public safety is the number one concern of San Francisco residents right now. But because of that, the biggest impact is in our district stations throughout San Francisco. And the amazing men and women that we have and the amazing police officers that we have manning those stations, simply there are not enough of them to honestly keep our residents safe, let alone in one of these hotspots like the Tenderloin District. So we need to appeal to our state and we need to appeal to our federal government for help. And that's both financial help, but it's also law enforcement help. It is literally impossible to think and ignorant to think that you're going to solve the drug crisis, the drug dealing and the drug addiction issues that have resulted from that in the Tenderloin without law enforcement.
Well, this is State of the Bay on local public radio, 91.7 KALW Bay Area, and I'm Grace Wan. We're talking with Mark Farrell, a former mayor of San Francisco, who is running for mayor again. We'd love to know what your questions are for Mark Farrell and what issues are important to you in the next election. You can join us by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255 or email us at stateofthebay@kalw.org. Let's go to the phones. We have Joe in San Francisco. Welcome to State of the Bay.
Wow. Thank you for having me with a wonderful former mayor and member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, Mark Farrell. I got a serious question for your guest. I don't know how much you watch SFGov TV. I find it rather entertaining because of a draft pick of his. In fact, I can't believe the 49ers didn't try to hire this guy. Because when this guy had a draft pick, he picked the greatest supervisor of all time in Gafford Stephanie. But there's a problem. A real problem. The current president of the Board of Supervisors, in Aaron Peskin, allows this trans bully, who is in a good relationship with them, to show up and hurl hate, just absolute stuff I will not repeat on the air because I'm going to presume you're FCC regulated. at various supervisors, including the great supervisor Stephanie, who stood between the NRA and our families. And I wonder if you, as a former supervisor, condemn President Peskin for not standing up for the supervisors and decorum and civility.
Well, thanks for that call, Joe. I mean, Mark, it's a good question about how the Board of Supervisors is working together with each other and whether there's enough civility and decorum to get solutions passed.
Yeah, that's a great question. And Joe, first of all, thank you for your positive comments about Supervisor Stephanie. I couldn't concur more. She's done an amazing job for District 2 and just super proud of the job that she's done. And I envision the job that she will do in Sacramento as well come November. You know, in terms of the Board of Supervisors, I don't know specifics about the individual you're speaking about. And obviously there is challenge in terms of decorum within the.
Oh, Matt, Mark, I think we lost you for a second. We're here on KALW, State of the Bay, 91.7 FM, and we're talking with Mark Farrell, who is running for mayor here in San Francisco. He was previously mayor in 2018 for a short stint, and I think he's back. Mark, are you there?
Sorry about that. I must have cut out there.
Yeah.
What I was saying was that, you know, at the end of the day, the relationships inside of City Hall over the last few years have fragmented to the point of nothing is really getting done. And what I believe the mayor should be doing is setting the tone in City Hall of civility. And even if you disagree on the vast majority of issues, which happens at times inside of City Hall, that you forge working relationships to find common ground on that 5 or 10% of issues where you can agree. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very important to me, and that's how I handled myself when I was on the Board of Supervisors, worked across the aisle for years to get legislation and budgets passed inside of City Hall. And at the end of the day, for the last 30 years, we've had a, you know, progressive Board of Supervisors and moderate mayor in San Francisco. And it was really only been the last few years that we've gotten nothing done. And that we've had this friction of a blame game and this animosity that's reached record levels. Again, it's okay to disagree on issues, but to maintain civility and also maintain a working relationship so you can work to find common ground. Not only do I believe it's the right thing for government to do, I actually believe that's what San Francisco residents pay elected officials to do. And we've simply seen an absence of that over the last 6 years.
Well, let's go to some other questions and comments from our listeners. Timothy writes, what is your position on urban alchemy and their role in keeping the streets of San Francisco safe?
So what I've witnessed in the Tenderloin and urban alchemy, I think, you know, they're obviously doing a good job as a presence in the Tenderloin. I think that we have to go one of two directions as city government. Either one, we have to expand it because right now they stop at certain streets. And you have businesses, restaurants, people that live in these neighborhoods that are not covered by urban alchemy that feel completely vulnerable and helpless in the Tenderloin and not supported. So either we need to expand it or we need to think about, you know, does urban alchemy serve the right purpose or do we need more police officers in the area instead? I think for right now, because of our police shortage, it's the right decision to make. I would like to see their corridors be expanded. But at the end of the day, you know, that's a decision we'll come to next year in office. But I think it's really important that everybody in the Tenderloin really feel supported by our city government. And I'm going to give you a quick example. You know, she was written about in the paper, I believe yesterday in the Chronicle, but I've spent time with a woman named Azalina who has a restaurant, an amazing Malaysian restaurant in the Tenderloin. She's a single mother working so incredibly hard, and she's now been nominated as a James Beard Award finalist. I mean, something to be really celebrated as a city and a city government. But instead, she feels that the city government isn't doing enough for her and that, you know, to spend an hour inside of a restaurant during the day to see what's happening, the activity on the outside is really incredible and tough for someone like her to maintain a restaurant. And she is someone who is committed to the Tenderloin, really wants to be there. but feels helpless because a lot of her customers don't want to come back to that neighborhood. And she's someone we need to support, an example of, it's not just about those suffering from drug addiction on our streets, which is, you know, obviously the heart and soul of the issue, but it's also people that live in the Tenderloin, people that operate small businesses in the Tenderloin or restaurants. These are amazing San Francisco residents trying to make it. And we need to do everything as a city government to support them, in my opinion.
I mean, I agree with supporting small businesses. What's the name of the restaurant, Mark?
Azalina's.
Azalina's. Okay, people. Azalina's, recommended
please,
by candidate
please
Mark
Farrell. 1,000%. And more than anything, the food's incredible. But what an amazing human being running this restaurant. And, you know, something that our city should be celebrating.
Absolutely. Malaysian food is amazing. I want to get to
everybody listening. Sorry, to everybody listening, please support her. Yes. They do an amazing job.
This is great. I want to get to another question from a listener. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you're facing is you are in a large group of somewhat moderate candidates. And this email from Matt, he writes, your profession of venture capitalist has a perception of being one that serves wealthy interests with the objective of maximizing return on investment. Money is the master, not serving the people or protecting the planet. Why would somebody who chose that profession make a good public servant?
Oh, great question. Oh, so first of all, I would challenge that characterization. And obviously, like any profession, you know, people approach it differently, handle things differently. What I would suggest is that, you know, I am running for mayor because I believe experience and competence matters. You know, what I am able to bring to the table as a candidate is 7.5 years of effective leadership inside of City Hall, representing District 2 on the Board of Supervisors. Again, I was the longest serving budget chair in our city's history, and then became mayor in 2018. Fought for all of the priorities that I believe were relevant then or relevant now for the city of San Francisco, and had great success. But also, I'm the only candidate in this race that has ever held a single job in the private sector. You mentioned my professional background before, but it was an attorney, an investment banker, and then an investor, you know, for the last 14 years. I believe that given our city's current financial crisis and our fiscal picture over the next 5 years, there's a projected budget deficit of $1.5 billion. I believe now more than ever, it is critically important to have somebody come in with a finance background that can lead the budget process in City Hall, that can lead with a vision and a set of priorities that he or she will fund fully, and be able to balance the budget while doing so. That's what I can offer to the residents of San Francisco. And that's why I believe that I am the best person to lead our city forward for the next 4 years.
Well, listener writes, I understand that there's a need for public safety. Where will Mark Farrell get all of these new police officers?
Look, another great question. So a few things I'll mention. We've come forward with detailed plans on our police staffing. Number one, we're going to reinstitute a program called DROP, although we will revise it from its prior version, which would basically allow police officers nearing retirement to stay on the workforce for an additional 5 years on patrol in our neighborhoods while not affecting their pensions. The estimates is year one that will increase the number of police officers to approximately 100 police officers that would have otherwise retired. We obviously need to aggressively recruit from other jurisdictions. I mean, as an example, Alameda County is offering $75,000 per police recruit to come to Alameda County, and San Francisco's entire police department recruiting budget is $250,000. I mean, it's impossible to think that we're ever going to compete. And I don't believe that we need to offer people $75,000. That's not the point. But we need to have a massively stepped up effort there. And then most importantly, is flooding our police academy classes once again. You know, as budget chair for 4 years, and then when I was mayor, we averaged 5 police academy classes a year with over 50 recruits per academy class. And we were literally turning people away at the door. This current mayor has had an average of 3 police academy classes. The last one had 19 recruits, a number of them which washed out after the first week. And so it's just a complete lack of focus and prioritization over the past 6 years has gotten us to where we are today. But I would suggest more than anything, we need a change of leadership, not only at the top of the police department, but within City Hall and specifically within the mayor's office. Because unless we change our tune as a city government, and I'm willing to be very prolific and proud to stand up and say, I value our public safety officers in San Francisco. The men and women, our police department, our fire department, our sheriff's department as the front line. Obviously, there are many more city employees behind that, such as 911 dispatchers. We need a mayor that's going to be very public in their support of these individuals, in their profession, that we will value law enforcement once again here in San Francisco. And I do believe once you do that, restore the budgets of these departments, then you will start to have recruits that will once again consider San Francisco. And that's what I will do as mayor.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. We've been talking to former mayor and current mayoral candidate Mark Farrell. Mark, thanks for being on State of the Bay today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we hope to have you back again soon. Coming up next, we'll talk to District 11 Supervisor Asha Safai about why he thinks he is the right person to be the next mayor of San Francisco. That's right after the break. Stay with us.
Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow morning at 11. We learn about the new chief of the Oakland Police Department.
Police departments are paramilitary organizations. Morale is directed from the top. It goes downwards. And your supervisors, your commanders, your captains, your lieutenants, in particular your sergeants, those are the people who determine the culture of a law enforcement agency.
A conversation with reporter Ali Winston. That's tomorrow morning at 11 on Cross Currents from KALW News.
Welcome to State of the Bay. I'm Grace Wan. We want you to be part of this next conversation. We're going to be talking to District 11 Supervisor Asha Safai, who is running to unseat Mayor London Breed. What questions would you like to ask Supervisor Safai, and what issues are you prioritizing in this mayoral election? Give us a call. We're at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Or find us on social media or email us at stateofthebay@kalw.org. Let me tell you a little bit about the supervisor. Asha Safai immigrated to the United States from Iran at the age of 5. He was raised by a single mother in Boston and earned a master's degree in city planning from MIT. He came to San Francisco, where he worked in city government under Mayors Willie Brown and Gavin Newsom. Safai has also worked as a labor organizer, doing the frontline work of representing janitors, among others. He's been the District 11 supervisor since 2016. Welcome to State of the Bay, Supervisor Safai.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Let's just dive into it. The electorate seems pretty unhappy with the current governance of San Francisco, and you've been on the Board of Supervisors since 2016. How is it that you're part of the solution?
You know, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that we are a strong mayor city. We have the strongest mayor city in the entire United States. Mayor has the power to hire and fire department heads, has the power to appoint majority of every single commission, and most importantly, has the power to make the final decision on spending. So that's not to absolve me as a member of the board. We have the power to pass laws. We have the power to inquire. We have the power to push and try to start new initiatives. But at the end of the day, final authority really rests with this mayor. And I think when I talk to people, when I hear on the streets, people want change. They really want change of leadership. This is not a deficit of resources in our city. It really is a deficit of management and leadership. And we can get into that. We can talk about the areas of public safety. We can talk about the areas of extreme homelessness. And we can talk about the areas of corruption. And I think at the end of the day, all of that comes back to a strong mayor city and some of the failures of this mayor.
So if you were to be elected mayor of San Francisco, the buck would stop with you.
That's absolutely right, 100%.
Yeah. Reports are that you and Mayor London Breed maybe are not on speaking terms, or maybe she's not talking to you. Is that accurate? And how is it impacting your ability to do your work as a supervisor?
I mean, listen, the mayor of the city has to work with 11 members of the board, department heads, members of community. Under most mayors that I have, I work with Mayor Willie Brown, I work with Mayor Gavin Newsom, Ed Lee. There was a consistent flow of communication, even if you didn't disagree. You know, at one point, I think about a year and a half ago, the mayor said, we're no longer going to have our monthly meeting. So that stopped. I think there's probably a majority of the board that she doesn't engage and work with. So how can you be effective as mayor if a good part of your job you're not doing, and that's communicating with the legislative body?
Well, you've worked with her in the past to streamline housing production and introduce legislation together.
That's right. You know, and I will say, admittedly, I was one of the people that wanted and have wanted Mayor Breed to succeed. I supported her when she first ran, worked on different initiatives and legislation with her. And I think at some point really started to see, and we really started to have a break when you started to see the organized retail theft and the theft that was happening in the city really explode. And she just did not want to engage. She did not want to assert the power of the mayor's office with the police department, with intervention programs. And we started to go our separate ways. And then I think the final straw was when I ran the ballot measure to bring accountability and oversight to the Department of Homelessness, Proposition C, almost 2 years ago, 18 months ago. And all 10 members of my colleagues supported it. We had unanimous support. We had tremendous support in the community. The mayor ultimately had originally said she would work with me and then broke and came out against the measure. And so for me, that was the final straw. I mean, I think people want to see accountability and oversight in that area. We called for mandatory audits. We called for that accountability, and she said no.
Hmm. Well, we just had Mark Farrell on, and obviously public safety is a cornerstone of his campaign, your campaign. You've posted a lot about retail theft. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, you know, statistics say that San Francisco is a safe place.
Yeah.
But you've had your car broken into while parked in front of City Hall.
That's
right.
I
saw that on Twitter.
You did your research.
I did my research, and you've also noted that your house was broken into while you were completing a renovation.
Yeah.
Mark Farrell suggests that we need to fire Police Chief Bill Scott. Do you feel the same?
I said this, I said this before he did and others. I think if you asked Chief Scott if this were his last year as chief, I think he would say yes. He's been the longest serving chief in over 50 years. I think he's done a lot of really good things. But just like we need a change in the mayor's office, we need some change in the leadership in a number of different departments in this city. I think he's done a phenomenal job, but I think as mayor, when I'm elected, we're going to be making some changes in a lot of departments, not just his. I would say it's time for a new leader in the MTA. I think there's a lot of frustration and lack of deliverables. We had a 10-year anniversary of Vision Zero, and the mayor, MTA, got up there and basically regurgitated a lot of the same things that they had promised a couple years prior. So there's a lot of failed leadership in a number of different departments. We got to look seriously at the Department of Public Health. One third of our city's budget goes there. And just to highlight one example, there was a gift card scandal within that department, lack of accountability of handing out gift cards. No acceptance of blame, a lot of resistance to moving towards sober living, something that I've championed and led since I've been on the board, rather than a collaborative effort. There's been, you know, we can have intervention and kind of clinic-based intervention, but we also have to have additional options like sober living.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back to public safety. I mean,
sure.
These are, you have a lot of great ideas on your campaign stuff, but you backed Prop B in the March election, and that was around minimum police staffing levels. It didn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is your plan for improving police staffing levels, or do you think that they're fine?
No, they're on the right trend. I will be rolling out an initiative in the next couple weeks that doesn't just talk about staffing for police, but also talks about overall public safety, nurses, firefighters, first responders, sheriffs, mental health care workers, 911 call operators. I think we still have to have creative incentives to get people within our department, and we're looking at that. And so we're going to roll something out about that. But also, just to put a fine point on it, we passed legislation unanimously. And again, mayor chose not to sign it, but say this is something that could work, but maybe because it's my idea, she didn't want to support it. But we passed legislation to say we will have proactive community policing. Every single police station in the city We'll have proactive community policing. That includes getting officers out of their car and doing real foot patrols, bike patrols. We know that when officers are present in the community and interacting and know their community, crime goes down dramatically. So that is a big centerpiece of my public safety plan, is fully implementing our community policing strategy, foot and bike patrols in community.
Well, I've noticed, I mean, going downtown, I often joke that the safest place in San Francisco has got to be the Apple Store at Union Square.
Right.
I mean, there's a massive police presence downtown. But if you go to a district like in the Richmond, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that that is a huge district. And if you talk to Chris Canning, who is the police chief there, he's like, we're really short-staffed. So tell me about allocating resources. Does retail, I know you're concerned about retail theft, but does the Apple Store merit a mobile command center when there are residents in the city who are aching to have police officers just patrol on foot?
So just to clarify what that is, what you're seeing in Union Square and the Apple Store and some of the other retail establishments, it's the 10B program. What they do is those stores themselves pay for off-duty officers to come in and work in uniform. And we allow that. We allow that. It's called the 10B program. Actually, what I did about 2 years ago is for the first time in the city's history, I passed what was called the 10A legislation, which allowed private entities to hire sheriffs off-duty in uniform. And that is something that's happening. It's part of my plan to get more police presence out there. So I know when people see that, they think the city's allocating resources to protect the Apple Store, but it's not. Actually, Apple's paying for that time. But then you can, to your point, that's why we did the community policing proactive foot patrol legislation. We want officers on the footbeat in the Richmond, in the Sunset, in the Excelsior, in the Bayview. And the way that they fill those now, because I walk the beat with the captain of the Tenderloin 2 weeks ago, every single police station is allocated an overtime budget. So even though we're short officers now, we have the money to pay for officers to come in. It's not a long-term solution because we need to properly staff, but they do have the resources to bring the officers in. It's still voluntary, but that's where a good captain, that's where good leadership from the top, where you're proactively saying, we need people to come fill these slots because we want to see proactive officers on the beat doing that job. And I think the more we get that, the more people feel safe, the more they know the community. So some of that, there's a blend of that in Union Square. There's officers off duty getting paid, but there's also foot patrol officers that are being allocated there, and we need more of that citywide, and that's what I want to do as mayor.
But just to finish that point, I mean, if an officer is doing a 10B program down in Union Square, which is great that Apple's paying for it, I mean, that's an officer who's not going to be doing overtime necessarily in his or her own district.
Right, or in another part of the city. And so the point is that that's why having the captain's lead. And when I walk with the captain, acting Captain Manning, first thing he said was, and here's the other thing that I want to put a fine point on. When officers are out interacting with the community, 90% of their interaction is positive. 90% of the feedback they get is, thank you for being here. Let me tell you about X, Y, and Z. You make me feel better. That helps with morale, and morale has been shaken over the last couple of years within the police department. And why is morale important? Is because who do new recruits and new officers go to? They go to existing officers for referral. So again, it's a key part of my strategy, and I think that fully implementing that will have a dramatic impact.
Well, let me reintroduce the program. This is State of the Bay on Local Public Radio, 91.7 FM, Bay Area. And I'm Grace Wan. We're talking with District 11 Supervisor Asha Safai, who is running for mayor. What are your questions for the supervisor? What issues are important for you in the next election? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, or email us at stateofthebay@kalw.org. I'm going to get to this email from Dwayne. He writes, I'm a San Francisco native and a retired retired San Francisco lieutenant who's lived in many districts of the city, or fire lieutenant. I currently live in District 11, and I feel the outlying districts are forgotten, taken for granted, with all the attention directed at the downtown hot zones because they get more attention. What have you, Supervisor Safai, specifically done for District 11 that would make you a standout as compared to a supervisor who would use a district as a stepping stone?
So I agree with you. In fact, that was the mantra of our campaign, no longer the forgotten part of San Francisco, when I ran in 2016. We've been able to marshal over $1 billion worth of investment into our district. We have put more traffic calming speed humps all over the district. We've planted over 3,000 trees just in District 11. When I came in, no housing had been built in 50 to 60 years. We built almost 600 units of housing, 65% of that affordable, and a new category of affordable for working families, teachers, nurses, firefighters. We've done over every single basketball and playing court at our playing fields. We've also gotten additional resources for family and child care centers. So we have been able to do a significant amount that had not been done. I still agree there's more work to do with the caller. One of the things, and going back to the public safety, since this is a fire,
Fire lieutenant.
The other thing that we did in terms of quality of life, and this is something that was unique to District 11, we created a community safety quality of life liaison. It's actually housed within the police department. It's part of my plan for citywide. It's housed within the police department, but it's dedicated 100% to District 11. So they're interacting with the merchants. They're interacting with residents. They're doing all of the, whether it becomes an encampment, whether it becomes trash, whether it becomes graffiti, whether it becomes an issue of robberies happening. They're the main person that's interfacing with the police department and all of the different agencies. That's a model that we want to bring citywide, and it's also part of my safety plan, something that we rolled out. The last thing we did was we were able to create a community benefits district. Not every district in the city, not every commercial corridor in the city has that. It's where the at a defined area on the commercial corridor, you put the resources together and you pool those resources to promote, attract, and enhance the commercial corridor. So a lot of what I described to you is a lot of my platform on a citywide level.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that if you were to become mayor, you would do a little bit of cleanup on department heads, and that includes the head of the MTA, Jeff Tumlin. I mean, what is Jeff Tumlin's responsibility for the MTA not, you know, being as robust as it could be? And what is the problems of COVID and just where we are these days in terms of remote work? Like, how much is that his fault and how much is that just our new reality?
I mean, listen, I think that every department in the city, because I was on the ground on a daily basis, it's one of the things that differentiates me between, you know, the previous candidate you had for mayor and other candidates that are in the race. Our mayor was there. I was there, but the other two candidates were not there. I don't know what they were doing during COVID. These department heads did step up, and we did have an active flow of communication. My problem has been with many of them is as we transition from COVID and we're moving into recovery, lack of understanding, lack of engagement with community, merchants, and otherwise to have a vision on how we proceed past where we are or where we were. And when I think of the Valencia Street corridor, when I think of something that was promoted as a test, we're going to test a center lane bike strategy. It's something that it's plastic, in his words, it's plastic, can be removed really easily. But what we saw in practice was a lot of confusion, a lot of people not going there any longer. People, when they did go there, they were ticketed. A lot of the merchants, number of the merchants have filed a lawsuit against the city because they feel like it accelerated the closing of their businesses. So we heard for years from Jeff Tumlin and the MTA, we are going to do better in proactively engaging and doing community outreach. As you can see, it's a big theme of mine. Mm. It's a practice. It's something that I've been involved in over the years. You go to any commercial corridor in this city, you talk to any merchant group, there is 100% consensus that they feel not listened to, forgotten, and neglected by the SFMTA. Now, you go to people that are bike and walking advocates and have that same conversation, there's a lot of frustration there. So I think that there's a lot of unanimity around frustration. And a lot of that goes back to the leadership of the MTA. If you can't get clear direction, if you can't get clear engagement, people are going to get frustrated. And as I said, the Valencia Street Corridor is a perfect example of that. They're now finally saying they're going to move away from the center lane and go to a protected bike lane on the curb, which was the original plan all along. But in the meantime, businesses are closing and a lot of residents, bicyclists, merchants are frustrated.
Mm. Well, let's go to the phones. We've got Rick on line one. Rick, welcome to State of the Bay.
Yes, I have a question, and this was also a question I had for the previous guest as well, but no one would let me get through, and that is, what do you plan to do about the homeless population? Because family is telling me to avoid San Francisco. You know, I come to San Francisco because I'm a member of BADS, the Bay Area Association of Disabled Sailors, mm-hmm. and I'm also a patient. A shout out to my favorite people at UCSF, Dr. Lewis Blevins, and a neuroendocrinologist in the Department of Neurology and Neurosurgery, and my favorite people in the Department of Ophthalmology, Dr. Craig Hoyt, a neuro-ophthalmologist, and Jay Stewart, my retina specialist.
Well, this is a really good question.
My family is telling me to avoid San Francisco because of the homeless crisis. Well, what do you plan to do for the homeless?
Well,
thank you, Rick.
Thank you for your question. Thank you for the shout out to your doctors at UCSF, a fine medical institution. I mean, Supervisor Safai, what can you tell Rick about feeling safe in San Francisco?
Well, I think what I heard more than anything was about pervasive homelessness. And one of the things that we did just this past week, I think, is going to have a significant impact on those that are unhoused living on the streets. It was the Homeward Bound program, something that was started under Mayor Gavin Newsom when I worked for him in 2004. From 2004 to 2019, over 13,000 people were served with Homeward Bound. Very simple concept. When we're screening you, when you're coming in, asking for assistance, we find out, are you from San Francisco? If you're not from San Francisco, can we help you get back and relocate to and reconnect with a loved one? 13,000 people were served from 2004 to 2019. Mayor London Breed buried that program in the bureaucracy, let it die. It served anywhere between 800 and 1,000 people a year. Two-thirds of the people that participate in the program never came back to San Francisco. For a few hundred dollars, you're saving the taxpayers of San Francisco millions, and you're reunifying people with their family. So we introduced legislation, got it passed last week. It will now expand to include people in shelters and people living in permanent supportive housing. So we didn't just reinstitute it, we expanded it. I think that's a big piece. The other thing we need to do is we need to expand the amount of shelter in the city. Part of the reason why there was a lawsuit filed against us by the ACLU and others was that the city was not following its own guidelines, was not documenting and not offering real housing or shelter opportunities. The last thing I would say, caller's name was Rick, right?
Mm-hmm.
I go back to the management and leadership that comes back to the mayor. We currently, when I ran my initiative 2022 to bring accountability and mandatory audits to the Department of Homelessness, which in 2015 started out at $100 million, it's grown to a $700 million department. We instituted and have called for mandatory audits. As we've done those audits, we realize a lot of the resources are being wasted. The very first one they did last spring, they had to call in the FBI. Okay? So we are going to make sure that that department is delivering the services that has control over 1,000 permanent supportive housing units sitting empty. So we have resources. We have to manage them better, and we have to expand.
Well, we've been talking to District 11 Supervisor Asha Safai about why he thinks he's the right person to be mayor of San Francisco. Supervisor Safai, thanks so much for joining us on State of the Bay.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a wonderful conversation.
Well, you can learn more about Supervisor Safai by going to his website. And this is State of the Bay for this week. We hope you'll join us next Monday at 6 for a rebroadcast of our show with segments on the dangerous street drug Trank, the Giants legend Mario Alioto, and filmmaker Jimmy Chin. For more information about this and other shows, visit the State of the Bay page on KALW.org. Tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb, engineered by David Kwan, and the fine D Minor was our board operator. A replay of today's Your Call is next. I'm Grace Wan. Good night, and thanks for listening. We got a...
This is Suni Khalid, news editor here at KALW. In case you missed it, tourism in San Francisco appears to be rebounding from the COVID pandemic, and curbs and sidewalks in Albany and Berkeley are being upgraded for the disabled. You can hear these stories, as well as others from our partners at NPR and the BBC, by logging onto our website at KALW.org. Meanwhile, keep your dial set on 91.7, where KALW, San Francisco Bay Area.
Your call tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock here on 91.7.